Self-Evident is a platform that is dedicated to speaking truths that were once self-evident and doing so in love. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode. I am Alyssa and with me is Jenna, of course, and we have a new special guest host, Lizzie. Can you introduce yourself?
Hello, I'm delighted to be here with you too. And I am a 22-year-old expectant mother. I'm expecting in May. And I've always been interested in health because my family has always been very health conscious.
Absolutely.
And that's always been a passion of mine. And I think even more so since I've been pregnant. It's really always at the forefront of my mind because this little baby's dependent on me for everything. So just really thinking about what I'm putting into my body is like a constant thought every day.
You're bringing that passion here to the podcast, and we're going to be talking today about why it matters what you put in your body, like you were saying, and also why it's important that we need to be aware of it on a federal level and what the MAHA movement is all about.
Hashtag MAHA.
Let's go.
That's right.
And funny enough, I am also expecting in June. Our due date is like a week and a half apart, which is crazy. So you could give birth in June. We could be June buddies for our babies. And I really resonate with that being pregnant, it's like now I was already looking at every single label, but now I'm like, wait, is this safe for pregnancy? I'm Googling every day. And
I remember I was telling Alyssa she was missing coughing a lot because she's given up coffee for her pregnancy. And I remember talking to her. I'm like, hey, I found out like you can make date coffee. So like, let's make a day where we can just get some dates and we can grind the pits together. And like,
never heard of this.
Yeah, it's super cool. But then she was looking it up. She's like, well, actually, I would prefer it if we didn't do that because what did you say?
Well, dates are meant for the third trimester. Usually they don't recommend you start eating them until you're like 36, 37 weeks when you're considered full term, and you're supposed to eat 6 a day because it softens your cervix.
That's right. It's a natural labor inducer.
Yes. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I don't want my cervix to soften when I'm 27 weeks. Right. Maybe we should not do that, but we can totally do it and you enjoy it because you are not a coffee person.
I'm not.
But I think after pregnancy, I might try that. However, coffee is one of those things that I genuinely believe if you have high quality coffee, it's good for you. One cup a day is good for you.
That's fair. I mean, you work at a coffee shop, so you're obviously in favor of coffee.
I am. I've always been a bit of a coffee nerd.
As you should be.
So, and there was actually this very interesting study I read recently that was published by, I don't know, the National Institute for Health or something. And they were talking about how coffee during birth, or during pregnancy, I should say, actually lessened the risk of gestational diabetes amongst women that were at risk for that. And we can post the link for this because I was doing a ton of research about like caffeine during pregnancy, whether that's safe or not, because you can go either way with it. Where I kind of landed was one cup of coffee a day.
Okay.
And some days I don't even feel like it, so.
Interesting. I landed on the other side. I landed because I was reading an NIH article, which I know the NIH, they have some issues with a lot of different things. However, the study that I found, I thought was very trustworthy. And it was talking about how because caffeine affects people differently, technically there's no safe known amount for pregnancy. Plus, my husband has some different medical issues to the point where he's not sick and dying or anything like that, but caffeine affects him to the point where if he has it, usually your blood pressure rises with caffeine. His drops.
Whoa.
And so he'll faint. And I'm like, well, if our daughter has the same caffeine issue that he does, I don't want her blood pressure dropping.
Oh, that's so having, true.
Yeah, so that's the main reason why I landed on no caffeine, but also the fact that there's technically no known safe amount because it affects people differently.
Right.
So, interesting though.
I know.
Controversial. We have different caffeine takes.
Very controversial because there have been multiple studies done on caffeine during pregnancy, and some of them were the ones that I was looking at. At least they found that 200 milligrams of caffeine, more than that a day during pregnancy, would definitely affect your baby's birth weight. So,
and how would it affect it? Would it make it a lighter baby? Would it not be able to put weight on? Wow. Mm-hmm. And would that kind of last more long term?
I'm not sure, but I do know that I think the babies being born were like significantly underweight. And so when a baby is significantly underweight at birth, they have a lot of trouble regulating their body temperature and their blood sugar levels. And so they just gives them a more difficult time.
Yeah, I also wanted to ask you guys, because I remember reading a study in Italy where the women would just drink their alcohol and not worry about it, even when they're pregnant or not. So is this a myth as well? What have you guys found out in your studies about this?
Okay, I'm not saying that I think alcohol is evil or it's a sin if you indulge in a little bit, because I have people in my life that I greatly respect that enjoy their cups of wine, and that's fine. Personally, though, there is no health benefit to even, because some people will say, oh, but wine, because you have the antioxidants. I'm like, well, if you just have a handful of blackberries, it's better for you than an 8-ounce glass of wine, because your body, your kidneys physically cannot process the alcohol content, even in wines, even in the high quality wines. It really struggles to process that. We don't have the ability in our body. Now, and then they'll say, well, in the Bible times, Jesus, you know, turned water into wine. And I'm thinking, well, the wine that they had back then had significantly less alcohol content than it does now. Their fermentation process was different, etc. So you can't just say, oh, because Jesus turned water into wine,
and Paul said wine is good for the belly,
right, that means, oh, we can indulge more. So I tend to look at those Italians, God bless them, I love Italians, but those women that are just drinking normally throughout pregnancy, and I see that as a big caution of, you really don't know what you could be doing to your baby.
Elizabeth?
Yeah, I'm on the side of not having any alcohol during pregnancy, and I never really have alcohol very frequently anyway, so it's not really been an issue for me at all. But I think, again, some of what is being found more recently is that in moderation, it can actually be fine during pregnancy, and that, again, these babies that were being born with fetal alcohol syndrome and things like that were mothers who drank way too much during pregnancy. So
also, I'd love to, if you guys have the studies that back your points up, just we'll throw them into
link everything.
Let's do it. But I think this also leads into why it's so important as Christians, because, well, you and as your individual selves, you guys are already kind of leaning over the way to have more interest in learning, okay, what foods fuel my body, what gives me more energy. But some people, some Christians, are like, I could care less. I remember we were talking about Alex Clark, Alyssa, and how just a couple years ago she was, you know, owning the fact that she's called the chicken nugget queen and she just puts Botox in her body and not caring like how she fuels her body. And I know there's a lot of Christians out there that kind of fall along the same lines, where it's just like, so I'm getting food and I'm grateful for it. Why do I have to care?
Do you want to go first or should I go first?
Sure. I could go first. And I would start with sharing a verse from 1 Corinthians 6. This is what always comes to the forefront of my mind when I'm thinking of this. And it says at the end of 1 Corinthians 6, "Do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you, whom you have from God? You are not your own, for you were bought with a price. So glorify God in your body." So in a sense, it's like, our bodies are almost, they're on loan to us, you could say. Our souls are what are eternal. And one of the ways we can glorify God with our bodies is by taking care of the bodies that God's given us. This is our only body we get. Another reason for taking care of your body is then you can hopefully be using your body for even longer to glorify God. If your body's not breaking down when you get older, your body will break down to some extent, as you start to get older, but being able to enjoy a higher quality of life because of health decisions you've made throughout your life, that you can continue serving God with the body that He's given you. I would say that's the main.
That's main your verse. Thesis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I completely agree with that. I think Christians tend to take freedom in Christ to maybe a little bit of a dangerous extent of, I have freedom in Christ, therefore I don't really need to care about what I eat or exercise or things like that. And again, like you were saying, well, what about when you're 50? What about when you're 60? What about when you're 70? And you've lived this lifestyle of kind of self-indulgence, of not having control, of, you know what, I feel like eating Wendy's for dinner every night, or I feel like getting Culver's for lunch every day.
Or even have, I know this kind of goes along with a lot of how girls live, especially where it's just like, I don't have time to make lunch. I don't have time to buy lunch. So I'm just going to skip lunch altogether, because that's the other end of the spectrum.
But yeah, for sure. Or like skipping breakfast. Or mm-hmm. And I know there's different things about fasting. I'm personally against fasting. But all of that to say, well, what happens when you're in your later years and now you can't really minister in your church anymore? You're not really that mobile, or you get tired really easily. You can't play with your grandkids. Exactly. Like, it starts to catch up with you that your decisions that you make in your 20s and your 30s, they have lasting impact for your life. I'm not saying, because I know we just had a conference that we all went to and the lunch that was served with Chick-fil-A. I'm not saying that once in a while you have to feel super guilty if you have Chick-fil-A, or like we just enjoyed Panera today for lunch. Like, once in a while, these things are good. We shouldn't feel guilty about that. But I think if they characterize our lifestyle as, you know what, I don't really care about meal prepping or grocery shopping or looking at the ingredients or being seed oil free, all of these things that are known to cause issues, like the red dye was just struck from the FDA, which we've been saying for years causes cancer, and they were telling us, no, you bunch of conspiracy theorists. Lo and behold, it causes cancer. Anyway, so we look at that and say, you know what, okay, that's something I can take steps towards. Let's just, if you do nothing else, just eliminate red dye from your diet. Just take it a step at a time. If we don't take those steps, you're just in for a world of hurt when you're in your 50s, 60s, 70s.
Mm-hmm. And I even think of, for example, I know some people, I think of some of my coworkers at the coffee shop where I work, and they like do not eat all day long, you know, like until they get home from work. And some days I think I really notice how crabby it can make them sometimes. Wow, yeah. And or they're just not able to be as fully present. And so another thing is, if you're fueling your body well, I think you can be more present for the glory of God, even in just your everyday interactions with people or in how you treat your family, mm-hmm. like whatever it is really, really hard when you haven't had enough to eat or drink to even be fully present and to be able to function normally, let alone being able absolutely. To show Christ's love to others, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I'm a better wife when I eat well and I sleep mm-hmm. well and absolutely. I take care of my body. That just factually speaking, I am a kinder person. Mm-hmm. I have less stress. I have more energy to show up for the people in my life. Exactly. I'm not saying that if you don't have those things, that's an excuse for your sinful behavior of, oh, sorry, I was such a jerk to you. It's because I didn't get enough sleep. So that excuses it. No, that's not what I'm saying. But in a very real sense, there are spiritual steps that we can take with our bodies that can prepare us for the day ahead of getting at least 7-8 hours of sleep, making sure we have a high protein breakfast, making sure that we have, well, pregnancy, I'm trying to hit that 100 grams of protein every
day.
That's
right.
100 ounces of water. I'm looking right now at my 40-ounce Stanley that my husband continually makes fun of me for, but I keep telling him it's so easy, though, to drink water. I just need to drink 2.5 of these a day. See? It's so easy. Done. The girl math is girl mathing. It's great. So all that to say, there are legitimate steps that we can take to just be better Christians.
Yeah, and there's Old Testament examples and narratives about this. I mean, everybody knows the story of Elijah and his temper tantrum, and then God tells him to go to sleep, and I'm going to get you some food, and you're going to be okay after this. And Elijah's
waiting. This is so true.
I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, never underestimate the spiritual power of food and a nap. Like, that's something God designed our bodies for. You know, we're supposed to sleep 1/3 of our lives. You know, you're supposed to get, like, hit that. For guys, sometimes it's like 6 hours, but for women, it's more hours. We need 8 to 10 hours. But
and even more when you're pregnant.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
I can sleep 10 hours and still feel like I got run over by a truck. Like, why am
you're
I so
growing
tired?
Another human.
I know. And that's a huge factor mm-hmm. into how God has designed us to function. And we're supposed to fuel ourselves. We're supposed to make sure that we're getting enough sleep, getting enough fuel. And I wanted to go back to what you were saying about fasting, because in the Bible, we are called to prayer and fasting in the Old Testament and in the New. So what's your take on that?
Yeah, so fasting in the Bible was never meant to be a dietary prescription.
Okay.
What fasting in the Bible is, when you look at the context, when you look at the cultural landscape of that, of what Jesus is talking about, is fasting is always accompanied by prayer and expectancy on God to answer prayer. So, for example, in the book of Esther, when you have this decree that Haman gives that all the Jews are going to be annihilated, what does Mordecai do? He calls for prayer and fasting. And Esther eventually calls for prayer and fasting for the entire nation. That is a spiritual discipline. And what fasting is meant to do is, just as our bodies are longing for food, our souls are longing for deliverance from God. And so I think it can be dangerous when we therefore look at that and say, okay, because God says prayer and fasting is a good thing for people to do, that therefore means that this is a good dietary prescription on my daily life. They were not called to fast Monday through Friday at 24/7 throughout the year. That's not what this was for. Okay. So that's my main pushback. And also, fasting, just, and I know there are different schools of thought on fasting with different fitness people. My husband is a big fitness guy. He owns a business in the North Shore area. So I think I probably get my opinion because of him and the research that he's done. Is fasting, when you do it for long periods of time, like in that consistent way, your blood sugar rises, your body is out of sync, your metabolism is affected by that. So all that to say, again, it's never been a, because prayer and fasting is in the Bible, fasting is therefore a legitimate way of dietary. Yes.
Interesting.
So
would you agree with that?
Fascinating. I would say yes, I agree with that. I haven't done a whole lot of research into fasting at all, because I haven't done much of it myself except for a few different various occasions while praying for something as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to say, I do not know too much about, I haven't looked too much into the
intermittent fasting
and things like that. Yeah. I know I've heard of a lot of different diets that include that, but
I used to intermittent fast, and I was crabby. It was very and my stomach would be growling, and I'd be so hungry, but I'm like, no, I need to feel skinny. And I don't know, for me personally, spiritually, even, like, let's not go into whether or not it's good for you on a biological basis or health basis, just even spiritually, for me personally, intermittent fasting was not good. It gave me a bad idea of fasting. It made me frustrated. It made me crabby. It made me not a nice person to be around until I could eat at 11 a.m. I tend to say no to fasting.
Well, let's move on to what we were teasing about in the opening, about the Maha movement. I've not done too much study into this. I've not been actively following all of the different trails of thought that have been coming out of it. So what's your perspective on RFK Jr. and his mission to make America healthy again?
Well, I'm very excited about it. There's an article we can link that.
I'd love that.
The White House recently released about what the RFK Maha Commission is going to include. And the main points from that are that Maha wants to tackle chronic health diseases such as cancer, diabetes, and cardiovascular disease, all of which have been steadily rising in the American population. And they also want to tackle autism and other mental health issues in children. And one of the autism statistics I found when I was looking that, as of 2024, there's 1 in 36 children who are diagnosed with autism. And in 2014, that was 1 in 59, 1 in 125 in 2004. So it's just steadily rising. And so Maha wants to, one of the tenets of their platform is to figure out why that is.
Wow.
What we can do to help our children. And the way they want to tackle this is by nutrition, physical activity, healthy lifestyles, tackling environmental hazards, and the quality and safety of food and drugs, as well as moving away from the current over-reliance on medication. this, I love this particular sentence from this White House article. It says, we must ensure our healthcare system promotes health rather than just managing disease.
Wow.
And I think that's something everyone should be excited about, because they're wanting to really get to the roots of why Americans are getting sick.
Instead of addressing just the branches.
Exactly. Rather than just the symptoms of that, which is very exciting to me. This is going to help Americans in the end. And so I think this is something that everyone can be excited about.
I agree. Alyssa?
Oh, yeah. I'm excited about it, too. And I think the interesting thing is, and I don't mean to be pessimistic when I say this, but MAHA is the biggest draw for people to the conservative movement. Yeah. And that kind of just makes me a little bit sad that people are more concerned about the food dyes than they are about the transgender issue, than they are about babies in the womb. So I don't know. From a pessimistic side, it's like, really, it's the food dyes that are drawing you to the conservative movement, nothing else.
But at the same time, it's very interesting to me that that is the case, because it also it's showing me that they do believe there is a baseline foundation for how to provide well for our bodies.
Yeah.
Which means
that's a good point.
Biology does mean something to them.
So wait, biology matters? Science matters?
So even if it is just saying like, yes, let's get rid of the food dyes, and that's why we get some rainbow-haired, I don't know, former leftist activist to join the conservative movement, that's at least a door opening for them to start realizing, wait a second, I believe in nutrition because I believe there are certain biological facts about my body that I need to supplement with food and with nutrition and with sleep. Well, doesn't that mean something about where I come from? So don't I start from conception? Don't I have biological factors that I cannot change about my body, no matter how many hormones or surgeries that I get? That's a very interesting perspective to have.
Yeah.
I'd never really thought about that. So there is a glass half full, glass half empty perspective to that.
Yeah, because like RFK, for example, I don't want him anywhere near any kind of legislation on foreign policy, on abortion, on anything like that. He does not have my vote for anything like that. If he stays in his lane with the Department of Health and Human Services, I am fine with that, because that is where he shines. And another interesting thing that I don't know, this statistic is thrown around, so maybe people know this, but the fact that over 40% of Americans are obese, like morbidly, dangerously obese. And then you look at other countries like Japan, who I think their obesity rate is probably, I think it was like 2 or 3%.
Yeah.
It was crazy low. So when we look at these things of, oh my goodness, why are so much of our population morbidly obese? We look at the fast food chains. What are they putting in their food? I don't know if anyone ever watched the McDonald's movie. I forget what it was called.
No.
It went back. It kind of told the story of McDonald's and the founding of it and the guy that originally found it, Ronald McDonald, and the quality of meat that he actually had. It was 100% beef patties. Everything was beef tallow fried. It was good food. But as soon as management was changing and things were getting cheaper to use seed oils, that came on the market and they changed their production of the food.
That's crazy.
But it used to, McDonald's, the fact is, McDonald's used to be healthy. Well, I mean, quotation mark healthy. Yeah, I mean, it's a burger, but hey, it used to be healthy. I mean, if McDonald's
beef tallow
was.
And beef are two things that are great for you.
I mean, if McDonald's was it what it was back then, I would totally, on a Sunday afternoon,
go to
McDonald's.
Why not?
And get a nice burger.
Right.
An American burger. Why not?
Yeah.
We just need to get back to the OG McDonald's. I think that's what RFK is trying to do. Like, just let's just go back to
let's
the OG
beef tallow.
Let's use beef tallow.
Absolutely.
And I don't know if you guys saw the whole thing with Steak and Shake.
Oh, how they're transitioning over to beef tallow.
They're like, oh, we're frying everything in beef tallow.
Uh-huh.
Please come support us. We're part of the whatever movement, the MAHA. They didn't say that because that's too conservative to say.
Yeah.
But they're trying to pander to that side. And Alex Clark is like, yeah, right. Actually, they pre-prep their food in seed oils. And then they fry them in beef tallow.
Yikes.
So, sorry, Steak and Shake. You still will not have my business until you come clean. Because you're trying to gaslight us.
That is very
interesting. Into giving us your business.
Okay. So, I know there's a lot of Christian females out there who, like myself, if I did not have my mother, I wouldn't be aware of why seed oils are bad. Can you just give us a brief description? What's the whole purpose of that? Why is that such a huge deal?
Well, so seed oils are very high in omega-6 fatty acids, which in and of themselves are not bad. But when you have too many omega-6 to omega-3 fatty acids in your body, that leads to inflammation. Okay. And due to the amount of seed oils that people are consuming, they have chronic inflammation in their bodies. This could be correlated with the rise in cancer, diabetes, heart disease, other chronic illnesses like that. And I'm hoping that as Maha, you know, digs into this, and because one of their things that they want to do is figure out what is causing all these chronic illnesses, I'm hoping they can truly discover if there's, if that's one of the correlations between that. So they say that the ideal ratio in the body for omega-6 to omega-3 is 1-to-1, or between 1-to-1 and 4-to-1. And the modern Western diet is 15-to-1.
Wow.
That's the ratio of omega-6 to omega-3. Which again, that means people who are consuming the modern Western diet have a ton of inflammation going on in their bodies. So
yeah, just you saying that, people who that know our family, like, you know, my husband has a very sensitive system. So that's honestly another reason why we're so health conscious, is kind of because we have to be. Right. And if we eat a meal somewhere, he can know within 20 minutes if they use seed oils. Because the inflammation in his system, how bad he feels, the discomfort he feels, like, is almost instantaneous. Mm. So, and yeah, it's crazy.
It does seem that even at Whole Foods, where there's a lot of seed oil that is used in just with chips, even if it's all natural, with different processed
foods. A lot of time nuts are fried in the seed oils.
And it just, you really can't escape it. So what are some tips or tricks that you guys have discovered that maybe you can kind of escape them in your own personal lives?
Well, one thing that comes to mind right away is there's a brand of popcorn called Lesser Evil.
Yes.
And it's one of my favorite snacks right now, because they use coconut oil.
I love that.
Which coconut oil is a wonderful oil. I know for at home, if you're going to be cooking things, what you can use is butter or beef tallow. Those are great things to use for cooking, as well as something like pecan oil.
Okay.
So choosing good oils to cook things in at home, or else getting dry roasted nuts. That's what I've been doing a lot, because those aren't roasted with any seed oils. And a lot of times, it's really hard to find nuts that have been roasted in anything except for seed oils.
Yep, so true.
So there's Simple Mills. Yeah. They sell crackers, and they sell a lot of different things. But I really like their crackers and other snacky things they have, because those usually don't have seed oils. Some of their products do. Some of them don't.
Yeah, but then they use, I forget what it's called, the way you're supposed to correctly process a seed oil. So it's technically safe, but I prefer to stay away from it if I can. But yeah, even Whole Foods, you struggle sometimes to find. So there's only one almond, and it's the Whole Foods brand, the 365, and it's the unsalted and unroasted.
Mm-hmm.
Their salted almonds have seed oils. So you just really got to get good at reading labels. Mm-hmm. Siete chips are great, seed oil free. Yeah. And they have a bunch of different flavors. If you like spicy things, chili lime, fantastic. Fuego, fantastic.
Those churro chips.
And then the Boulder brand for potato chips, because it's just potatoes, avocado oil, and salt.
Wow.
Fantastic. So much better than your typical, like the normal crinkle chips. Tastes so much better. Wow. They're crispier. They're not as saturated in oil, because usually you get those potato chips, like the Lay's brand, and it's just oily. Mm-hmm. You look at your fingers and you're like, what the heck is that?
You're glistening.
But with the Boulder ones, it's genuinely crispy. Your hands don't get oily. It's so, moms out there, it's cleaner for your kids. Just, you don't need to worry about oily fingerprints everywhere in your car. So Boulder brand is great. I'm trying to think of any other brands that are pretty much safe for people. But again, you're going to be spending a little bit more. But what's the downside of not spending that money? It's going to be medical bills possibly down the road. So really, You need to view your health as an investment, in my opinion.
I want to pivot real quickly before we run out of time and talk about the dangers of valuing the health and wellness above what God has called you to do. Because there are a lot of people that they prioritize health so much that it becomes an idol for them. Where's the balance? And what can we do as Christians to make sure that, yes, we're honoring Christ in this sphere of our life, but we're not going to overshadow what Christ has for us in obsessing over food?
I would say that you have to be sure that you're still making the time for daily time in God's word and prayer, and making time for that and not letting your pursuit of health and a lot of times the more complicated things that come along with it, then not letting that cut into your time with the Lord, I would say. Or, for example, you could go take a walk outside. If you're trying to go for a walk every day, that's something my husband and I have been trying to do. And you can listen to the Bible while you're doing that, possibly.
Love that.
Yeah, this is a great question.
Because what I think what you're saying, and it's very, very important, that the closer you grow to Christ, the more his desires for your life will line up with what you want for your life. Because growing closer to him means you're going to be more aligned with his views. And so staying in his word and praying and making sure that you're in a Christian community, that is going to deeply affect the way you view food and you view life. There's actually this book that my mom recommended to me called Confessions of a Food Catholic, and it's written by Doug Wilson. I was talking with Alyssa a little bit about it.
I was just about to bring this up.
Okay. Yeah, and what he was saying is that food is supposed to be a time for social gatherings and for communing with Christ. And he brought up the fact that the Lord's table is something that we as Christians are called to, because it unifies us and brings us to remembrance of this is what we're here for. We are here because of what Christ has done on the cross for us. And so he brought up the three priorities of what food is supposed to be in our lives and how it's supposed to be on our table. And this kind of surprised me. He said the first priority when it comes to food is not the food, it's the people. It's the people gathered around your table and who you're eating with and being able to pour into them and being poured into. That is the most important thing. The second one is the table itself, being able to gather around a table and have that time and that priority to make sure that you are in person with one another and fellowshipping with one another. And then it comes the quality of the food. You know, he brought up the verse of better is a quiet dinner of herbs where love is than a fatted calf in hatred. And that is something that really struck me, because you can be obsessed with food all you want. And everybody knows somebody along who would bring their own food to a gathering because they don't like, maybe there's going to be molecules in that food that I don't like. But he was bringing up the fact that as Christians, food is a way of communing and coming closer together as Christians and being part of the community of Christ. So you need to be able to put aside your food avoidances, because if you're not like deathly allergic to gluten, then there's no reason why you should shun your brother or sister when she brings you a banana bread during Sunday. So that was something that was very interesting to me. And I know we have a couple minutes left. So Alyssa, if you want to have, do you have anything to say?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head that whenever something becomes an idol, it starts to not only inhibit our relationship with God, but our relationship with other believers. And not to say that you shouldn't be health conscious in whatever setting you're in. Of course, it's important to make sure that you're eating well. But when that starts to inhibit the fellowship that you can have, for example, if you're in a small group that also hosts dinner, and the meal is not your ideal, you're not getting the perfect balance of protein and vegetables and a healthy starch.
Kraft macaroni and cheese again, okay.
It's white rice instead of brown rice. If you take that to an extreme to where you say, you know what, we're going to eat first and then we'll come join the small group, you're really inhibiting the fellowship that God has for you in that setting. So again, whenever something becomes an idol of the heart, we need to surrender that to the Lord.
I would just provide the encouragement that do whatever you can for your health, even if it's small, even if it's only going walking, you know, every day, and that's what you do, or cutting out the sugary drinks that you've been drinking, making sure you're getting a good amount of sleep each night. Just choose one small thing to do for your health, and it'll pay dividends.
Yeah. Don't think it's an all or nothing kind of thing.
Don't think you have to radically, completely change your whole lifestyle. Start with something. That is a goal that you can actually stick with.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining. We're so excited to have you as another guest host when you can make it. This was such a great conversation. And thank you guys so much for listening. We hope that this was encouraging for you and that it was a fun conversation that sparked maybe some questions or maybe some thoughts that you have for yourself. But just in closing, I just want to read 1 Corinthians 10:31, that whatever you do, whether you eat or drink or whatever you are doing, you're supposed to do it all to the glory of God. And until next time, let us firmly rely on the protection of divine providence. This is Self-Evident.